everybody, and welcome to another episode of At the Devil's Ball, the podcast where we talk about horror and genre films in a positive and constructive manner. I am Nathaniel.
And I am Samuel.
And we are finishing up our haunted house month, or haunting month, I think is what the cards say, right?
Right.
With The Others, which was made in 2001. We have a very special guest with us this week. We're finally having her on her own, correcting an injustice that we insensitively caused. We have Maggie back with us.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming back. Yeah. Obviously, you've done both our New Year's specials the last 2 years, and now we've got you on your own. And tell us a little bit about what you do. You work with Jamie. Are you on Morbidly Beautiful?
Yes, I write for Morbidly Beautiful as well as Starry Constellation magazine. I do a lot of interviews for Starry Mag and a lot of editorial stuff at Morbidly Beautiful.
Very cool. Morbidly Beautiful is, tell us a little bit more about Morbidly Beautiful. I actually don't know that much about Morbidly Beautiful.
They're growing. It's a horror website run by Stephanie Greenshaw, who's great. Do a lot of coverage on independent films that need to be, you know, promoted. A lot of women in horror. I believe they also have a podcast branch. But they post a lot of good content pretty frequently, as well as throwbacks. So a lot of old stuff gets thrown into circulation on social media as well, just to keep everything flowing. And it's great. Good community of writers over there.
Very cool. There are a lot of good communities for writers.
For sure.
And then I know some of the larger ones tend to get a little iffy from what I understand, but it's not a world I know that much about, except that I'm friends with a lot of people that are in that arena. So I'm glad to know there are some good ones that are positively motivated. And so how long have you been writing for them?
2 or 3 years now. Okay. I believe it might be more. I think I actually had one of my first articles come out pre-pandemic. So maybe I have no concept of time. And it's been...
Nobody does. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Once you get a little older, you're going to discover that you have no concept of time at all anymore. It just gets worse as you get older. When you're old people like us, I think Sam can speak to that as well.
Yes.
We're like, oh yeah, we did that last year, right? And, well, no, that was right. 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Right.
You know, or that movies we saw in 96, that was only 10 years ago.
Right.
You know, but it's a long time ago, but
everything was last year. That's fine.
It's very true. Anything coming up on Morbidly Beautiful that you're excited to talk about, or you have any pieces?
I am in the process of writing something on that Hulu queer ghost hunting special, Living for the Dead. Been working on that, so that is coming up, and just had something come out to help promote Jamie and Emily's new short, Your Husband Was a Good Man.
Right, I saw that, and I shared that along where I could. Yeah, definitely good piece, and that's exciting. So you're good friends with Jamie and Emily, and you've been working with them on promoting that project.
Yes,
very cool.
Yep.
Jamie
actually encouraged me to pitch my first piece to Morbidly Beautiful. It was, of course, on Mike Flanagan's works.
Sure. That sounds like Jamie. Yep. Yeah. But no, she's wonderful. She's always so encouraging. So, very cool. All right. So then we're going to do The Others here. Sam, yes. Do you want to do the vitals before we jump into this?
Yeah. The Others was released on August 10th, 2001, directed by Alejandro Amenábar. I guess is how you pronounce it. I'm sorry if I messed that up. He also wrote it. The cinematography was Javier Aguirre Robe.
I love giving Sam the foreign language names.
So I can barely pronounce the English names usually. So, you know, Doing the foreign ones is even better.
Aguirre-Zobe, I believe is how it's
Okay. Yeah.
pronounced. It might be. I might be wrong. You might have been right. I don't
I don't know. Who knows?
know.
Starring Nicole Kidman, Christopher Eccleston, Fionnuala Flanagan, Alakina Mann, James Bentley, Eric Seitz, Elaine Cassidy, and Renee Asherton. That's the main cast. So where do you want to begin with this?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
It's obviously it's a great film. So I guess this was one of my picks.
Right.
And so I guess I'll start with that as to first of all, I mean, I mostly it was just released on Criterion, so I bought it. And that's
Right.
part of the reason why I wanted to talk about it. But the other reason was that I've always really enjoyed this film. I do remember when it came out, I was on a date and the trailer for this movie was on the movie we went to see. I don't remember what movie we saw, but I remember the trailer. And of course, they give away probably the scariest moment in the entire film in the trailer.
Right.
And I remember the date kind of going rigid. And she was like, really. And then afterwards, when we were driving back from the movie, I said, "So that other's movie, that was pretty scary." And she's like, "I'm trying to forget that." And so she had no business dating me
Right.
because she probably saw too many things that she was not comfortable with dating me. But I think she ended up coming out. So I think all men had no business dating her, I
Right.
think. But at the end of the day, but I do, but that I remember always that, I always remember when somebody else that's not into horror reacts to horror. And I always keep that in the back of my head as testament to its effectiveness.
Right.
So I felt, so I mean, the fact that that even in the trailer was enough to give her like nightmares, really worked towards this film. But in terms of ghost stories, I mean, I think that it's a great counterpoint in some manner to the other films we've done. Also, just need to put out that disclaimer. This movie runs on a particular twist. So if you haven't seen the movie and you're listening to this episode, you need to go watch the movie because we're going
Right.
to spoil it in like literally like 30 seconds, I think.
Yeah.
This is sort of the point of harbor on that. Watch that movie because we're about to ruin it, which is it makes a great counterpoint to the other films because it's technically from the ghost's perspective.
Right.
Which is not something we see very often. I don't think we'd ever seen it before this movie. I think
No.
there have been a couple films since that have done it. Haunter with Abigail Breslin.
Right.
I Am a Ghost, which I didn't see, but I know of it.
Right.
Was another film that was made. We have seen a couple films that have been from that perspective, but we'd never really seen. I mean, there was Ghost, I guess, but different
Yeah.
animal. Slightly different animal, or Always, or
Right.
you know, that those films did involve a ghost perspective, but not a haunting perspective. So this is a
Right.
haunted house from the perspective of a ghost. So I guess I would start with there, but why don't we ask our guest what she thinks about it. Maggie, what's your overall takeaway on the others? Is there something that's particular? When we offered you to come on this month, you did say I think you liked the others.
Yep.
So what prompted that decision?
So I remember the first time I saw this movie, I was quite young. I was being babysat by my cousin who didn't give me a lot of oversight and would let me watch anything that I wanted. But she turned the lights out and went into the basement and let me watch this movie on my own. And it was spooky. I didn't really appreciate the artistry of it until I rewatched it this time around. It's really beautifully shot. Lighting is good, acting is great. But I remember being blown away by the twist, without, I guess, really understanding the gravity of it as a child.
Right.
And now I like the concept of like ghosts being haunted by humans. We have a very narcissistic view of, you know, we're being haunted, our homes are being haunted, but ghosts were there first.
Yeah.
And you know, it's paced pretty well. I would trim maybe 10 minutes, but I mean, they make good use of the length. The writing is good, the pacing is good, the acting is really good, even the children. And I like Nicole Kidman. I am not always a fan of her performances, but I think she did a really good job in this, and it's a different role for her.
I totally agree on
Right.
especially on that last point that Nicole Kidman is she's so good and is such a solid actress that sometimes I think certain choices that she's made in roles she's taken maybe haven't quite highlighted her talent
Right.
as much as that. But I mean, like I remember going not too long ago watching Dead Calm. She's stellar in it. And that was early in her career. She much like Tom Cruise, who's actually a producer on this film, I think they were still married at the time this came
Yeah,
out. So
this is the last film that they did before they divorced.
yeah. Both of them are actually really excellent actors, but because of they became movie stars, I think that sort of public perception of them kind of moved in a different direction. I think people forgot they were good.
Right.
And The Others, I think, is one of those roles that Nicole Kidman got to kind of be like, no, I'm really, really good at what I do. And it's not a glamorous role. It's not a movie star role.
Right.
It's an actor role. And she's just utterly stellar in this. She just one of the things I tend to notice, particularly when it comes to watching movies with big stars in them, is whether or not the we're guilty of this a lot, where we'll start calling a character by their actor name on the
Right.
show, where we'll just be like, oh yeah, and then Tom Cruise does this or Tom Cruise does that. While watching this movie last night, I kind of forgot I was watching Nicole Kidman and was actually just watching the performance and understanding the character that at one point I do remember kind of going like, holy shit, that's Nicole Kidman. And she's a star. And I think that's a big amount of a big testament to her power as a performer that she's able to make you forget she's Nicole Kidman for a minute.
Right.
That's not an easy thing to do when you are as recognizable as Nicole Kidman. Yeah, I think she's great. Talk to me a little bit more about her performance, Maggie. Like, what gives you that impression that she's really good in this? If that question makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, her character believed her own rhetoric, and you could feel how grounded she was in her belief system, in the realization that, spoiler, I guess, towards the end, no one is leaving, no one's going to live in their house. They're not getting kicked out of that house. She was just very dignified in it. She played the hysteria very well when the situation called for it. And in the scenes with Christopher Eccleston coming back and leaving, the devastation of kind of that separation really rang true. And again, you forgot that it was Nicole Kidman who has become now from movie star to meme. But no, she was just it was really grounded. She kept it real in spite of the kind of fantastical elements of the story, and was just really compelling to watch.
She easily could have. There's a lot of instances in this film where I think she easily could have phoned it in. Or like just in general, this character you could make an argument she's kind of an abusive parent, but she doesn't play abusive parent. She plays unwittingly abusive parent. Like
Right.
she could play it up as she could play it arch, where she's mean. She could play it, even, ham it up and be evil. She could do that. She doesn't. She keeps this grounded in a way that that is truly just really excellent work. So I agree with your with that assessment. Sam, what about you? What do you think about Nicole Kidman in this movie?
I think she's wonderful in this. When I was looking into the film, like I realized that, you know, this came out, this was what she did after Moulin Rouge. And that's probably my least favorite Nicole Kidman performance coming into probably my favorite Nicole Kidman performance. So it shows a lot of range on her part, and she just, you know, kills it. She plays the severe, you know, English mother, you know, so well that, you know, you buy into it. But she, yeah, like you said, she's not, you know, she's not a villain in this. You know, she's just a very strict and, you know, tightly wound character. But yeah, I love her in this. It's, you know, this is one of my favorite Haunted House movies, and my favorite performance by her.
Why is that? Why is it one of your favorite Haunted House movies?
Just because it's so well made, it's the twist. It's one of those movies where, like you said before, you know, it's dependent on the twist, but it once you know the twist, it doesn't make the movie worse. It
No.
doesn't, you know,
In fact, it makes it more interesting to watch in some ways.
yeah.
I had a really good time
So,
watching it last night from that perspective. So,
like,
yeah.
I've never been a big fan of The Sixth Sense, because if you try to go back and watch it, it's just like it doesn't work anymore once you know the twist,
You think
in my
so? Yeah,
opinion. In
there
my
are things. I
opinion, yeah.
definitely. I think I agree with you. There are things. Last time I watched it was a little bit like, wow, that the it's even lends even more credence to the argument that anybody who ever says they guess the twist at the end of The Sixth Sense is lying, because if you
Right.
watch it, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It contradicts itself constantly throughout the narrative that you're like, well, wait a minute, how can he do that? That's not
Right.
supposed to be how that works. But it. But yeah, I think. This twist does add something to the narrative. In
Right.
fact, when you watch it again, it's actually pretty obvious. They pretty much tell you within the first 2 minutes,
Oh, yeah.
you know, but you don't put it together.
Right.
But yeah, like, you know, it's really there,
Yeah.
you know, right from the start, to the point that at one point, I think, like, the kids almost look at the camera and kind of be like, we're dead, guys. We're, you know, we just don't really know it yet. But yeah, it's much like Hannah Gross, where it's
Yeah.
once you know and you go back and you watch it right from the first point, right the first second you meet her, they pretty much look at the camera and tell you exactly what it is. You just don't
Right.
know that's what they're telling you. But no, I love watching it from that perspective because I just love the idea that she's running around like shutting doors and locking them. And that the humans in the house were like, what the fuck? Like,
Yeah,
wait, why
right.
are the doors all shutting?
Yep.
You know, I love that all the things that you would expect in a haunted house movie
Are
are
being
being
done here.
done, but they're being done by what we perceive to be the living. It's fascinating to watch
Right.
from the perspective of that twist. It definitely doesn't damage the movie at all.
No, and so, you know, with it being, you know, that clever to where it holds up even, you know, to repeat viewings, and just the level of, you know, of precision and art that goes into making this film, you know, it's just the cinematography is gorgeous. The lighting is perfect. I joked on social media the other day, you know, when I was watching it, that, you know, this is better shot than most, you know, in the darkness than most modern films are in the light.
Right.
Because, you know, it's so artfully done.
I was noticing with the cinematography of this film, I was thinking about it and watching it and be like, I bet this movie would work in black and white. And I think it might, but it wouldn't work the same because the even though this film doesn't really have much color in it, very specifically, there's very little color. The kids are basically wearing white the whole time. She's wearing black pretty much the whole time. The servants are all dressed very drably. The house itself is pretty drab. It's all very neutral colored. You know, there's fog outside. It's just white outside. But I realize the color is necessary to create the contrast because one of the most disorienting things about this film is that you have no idea what time it is ever. And because they have this idea that, well, no, we can't have light. We can't have natural light in any of the rooms the kids are in. there are moments where I forget that I forgot about it, and then like Nicole Kidman would like leave a room and it would be bright daylight in the next room, and I was like,
Right.
you, that black and white would ruin that effect, I think. I don't
Yeah.
think it would quite work. The film would probably still look great because
Oh, for
of,
sure.
but
Yeah.
it would lose that aspect. And that was one of the things I was noting when watching it, was being like, yeah, it's totally this darkness versus versus light contrast is carrying so much weight
Right.
that you to risk losing it would be ridiculous, even though the film probably still would look great as a black and white gothic story. But
Right.
Maggie, what about you? What do you think about the cinematography in this film? You mentioned you
It
thought
is,
it was beautiful, so.
yeah, it is beautiful. Everything is well framed, well shot, well lit. I always think about, in if something is pretty much exclusively in the dark, like the way they used to shoot Supernatural, you couldn't see anything. And I just use that because that was an egregious example of terrible lighting for shooting in
Right.
the dark. But this was just so well done, and it probably helps that Nicole Kidman, she's just got like a great complexion for the gothic tone. I'm sure getting the lighting for her is probably a feat in of itself because she's so pale, and they did it without, making her look like a ghost.
Right.
She just, which I think is a big thing because she's so wavy, but they made her look alive with the lighting, and I think that that was kind of a more nuanced way of, keeping the audience blind to the fact that she too is one of the ghosts, because I think if someone was going to figure out the twist of this movie, I think they would think that the children were dead because they would always say creepy stuff, but
Right.
maybe like she was kind of a bereaved mother who was still imagining them. So it was kind of like another red herring. And I think the lighting just contributed to that narrative, and without making everybody look gaunt, it kept it spooky.
Yeah. I was gonna say, I think if you were to guess, if I were to take a wild guess, I think I would have been like, well, the servants are dead, right? Like
Right.
they're ghosts. You know, if you were to tell me that there was a twist in the others but didn't say what it was, my first guess probably would have been like, oh, Fenella Flanagan's almost certainly a ghost because she's Fenella Flanagan. She's scary.
Right.
But and I love Fenella Flanagan. She actually was on Lost breakup here and there,
Oh.
and I really enjoyed her work on that show. But yeah, she's a wonderful British character actor. Who brings a lot to this role as well. In much in the same way in Lost, where she was just a woman who, knew more than she was telling the whole time. And
Right.
Maggie, are you a fan of Lost? Have you seen Lost?
I have only seen, I think, four episodes.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, it's a type of show that I tend to be like, it's like my favorite show ever, but at the same time, it's so like maligned by so many people that I never recommend it to anybody. So it's always like, did you see it? Because if you
Right.
have, great. But and then of course it's the did you like it? Because a lot of people didn't. But they did when it was on, but then they turned on it. But anyway, I digress. I'm sensitive about Lost. But yeah, it's she's great in that. But I was gonna say that to my point that I was gonna say that I think you would guess the servants are
Right.
ghosts. The kids would be a good solid second guess, but I think you're right. The thing is that you would assume Nicole Kidman is still alive. You know that
Right.
she the idea that she is not a that she is not what she appears to be, I don't think would occur to anybody while watching this movie. And that's what I think makes the twist so effective, is you're not expecting your central cast member, your most grounded cast member, in fact, to suddenly be the object of something that's somewhat fantastic.
Right.
The central protagonist always has to sort of have things happen to them. The idea that they are part of that overall action usually doesn't occur to us as viewers, I think. And so that's really, it's a great point. But yeah, what Maggie, what is there a particular thing that you wanted to talk about with this film? Is there a particular topic you would like to initiate?
You know, I
Bring up a
just want
prompt.
to acknowledge that the maybe first 2 minutes of the film are the worst because you see all of the producers and
Oh yeah, okay.
it's like Weinstein, Cruise. I'm like, oof, just each one is a painful sight to see, but it's a good movie. No, I just think how effective it was in terms of like atmosphere and pulling, the rug out from under you. I do think that, and I thankfully do not have the religious trauma to intimately speak about this, but I do find Nicole Kidman's character being so religious and so aligned with making sure it's instilled within the children, only to have them be kind of these not so great creatures, fantastical beings that would otherwise be condemned by people who follow the Bible or, scripture so closely. I thought that was an interesting paradox within it.
Yeah, and what do you make of that? That was so something I was gonna kind of broach to the group. So there is a lot of religious background here. It doesn't really do much within the narrative. So what is your guys' take on that? Like, what is its what do you take away from it? What's the purpose of that religious background? What does it accomplish within this narrative in your estimation?
Well, a lot of this film is about repression, and what better way to show that than to have, a staunchly conservative religious figure at the head of the household. So I mean that's what I took away from it. That this movie is about, a woman who's, repressed and very closed off from everything. So I think that just I think it just fills in some of the shadows of her character to have her be such a religious figure. But that's just my take. I don't know what you guys thought of.
I think some of it was also an anti-clue. There was a scene where she had the kids reading their lessons independently, and it was very blatant, treat your family with respect. Don't do harm to your parents. Don't do harm to your brother or sister. And then just the irony of, she's enforcing this upon them when she broke all of those rules laid out in the lesson. That was
I mean, there's certainly a lot of irony in the idea of this is a woman that actually just smothered her children with a pillow. And once you know that, and you're kind of like, so when you, again, it's one of those things that when you rewatch the movie and you're kind of like, oh, this is awkward, actually. Like, you just murdered your kids. Luckily, they don't remember, but it's actually one of the things I liked about this movie, because I had forgotten some things about it, and I found myself wondering the whole film, how much does Anne know, was on my mind a lot when watching it this time. And I forgot that at the end of the film, when the psychic does say, like, "Isn't that why you murdered your children?" and Anne freaks out, like, "Oh shit, she killed me." I'd forgotten about that reaction. So the whole time I kept wondering, like, does Anne know everything, and is she just playing coy? Because Anne seems like she's got things under control in a lot of ways, despite the fact that she's only eight. A precocious child is always a good way to get some good creepy factor, I think, out of your haunted house film. But yeah, then you find out that she really doesn't know anything. She just happens to she knows a little bit more than her mother, because she's more open to. There's also that irony. You do have a woman who's deeply religious and spiritual, and yet Says like, I don't like fancy talk. I don't like ghosts. There's no such thing as ghosts.
Right.
You know, the idea that the realm, but one realm of the spiritual is, she's utterly humorless about. And then the other, she completely disregards that these two elements of spirituality don't coincide in her mind, is, where at the same time her children, who are doubting certain aspects of their lessons, are more open to an actual spiritual encounter, what they believe is a spiritual encounter, where they in fact themselves are the spiritual encounter. I do love the idea that at the end of the film is like, what about the child's limbo? And she's like, I don't know. And I'm like, you're in it. You're literally in it. You know, congratulations, kids. Your mom condemned you to a weird, timeless existence of eternity where you will never grow up, and you'll just sit here in this house with your crazy, strict mother. Although maybe she's going to loosen up now. I mean,
She
who
might.
knows? But and you got Finola Flanagan hanging around. But which, by the way, talk about hell. You die and then you're still a friggin' servant in some rich lady's house. I
You
mean,
still have to
that.
know your place,
Don't worry, ma'am. We were here first, but you, I guess you own it. You and
All
your
right.
kids. Well, I'll get back to cleaning up after you, forever, for all eternity. You know, Mr. Tuttle's out there going like, no, luckily my back don't hurt anymore. But you know, although who knows, can they feel pain? I guess they can feel pain.
Well,
The metaphysics of this.
there was the part where she pricked her finger and she reacted with pain to that. When she was doing the cross stitch or whatever.
Well, I do want to circle back a little bit more to the faith aspect of it, because I do, I feel like there's something more there we're not quite getting at. But with on that note, which was of course meant somewhat in jest, but Maggie, you did mention at the beginning when you said you as a kid you didn't understand the implications of it, and we just sort of, you know, comedically mentioned the implications of it. But did you want to elaborate on the impli th those implications that didn't occur to you as a child?
I just think, the gravity of it's pretty heavy. And as a kid, I knew that I was supposed to be kind of like moved by whatever this twist was. I could feel that it was meant to be a pretty big deal. But now I think just piecing together all of the elements of, to kind of dig a little deeper and tie this back to even the religious element. One of the first scenes about denying Christ, the kids said, "Well, we would know it inside, but we would project that we didn't." And I think that ties back to kind of the narrative of Anne. I think deep down she probably knew that, what had occurred, but she was rejecting it, and she's probably projecting, and that's why she kind of punished the kids for basically doing, what she was, or saying that they would hypothetically in those situations, but she was denying herself of the truth, denying the children of the truth, just to survive in that other worldly, I guess, through the veil, which I found interesting. I don't know. It's just there's a lot of things that we could kind of weave together here and make it more powerful too.
Well, I mean, as far as what Grace knows, I mean, there is there is the scene with Eccleston where he says, Anne told me everything, and she says, well, you know, I lost my temper, and I was, you know, scared, and I was worried about you, and I was worried about all this stuff. And it kind of does like just barely skirt the line of, you know, maybe Grace does remember something that she doesn't want to talk about. But it seems like what she's talking about is that she like hit them or something, because ultimately she doesn't seem to actually remember that she killed them. You know, but the scene does, you know, Kidman plays that something's tugging at her. And he knows, he's figured it out. Like, It's it, but it, although he's such an interesting little wrench that they throw into this film, that to the point that when watching it, I was like, well, they almost gave away everything with him.
Right.
But at the same time, they have the servants outright say, like, he doesn't, I don't think he even knows where he is. But he seems to get it. He gets up out of bed. It's the first time we really see him get up out of bed is when he's having the
Right.
argument with Grace, and he says, I'm saying goodbye. Who knows where he's going? But it's not the house. But he's obviously judging her. And so that's another question. What does he know exactly?
Right.
Is he aware of his condition? Does he know he's dead? Is he dead? Is this a Jacob's Ladder thing where
Right.
he's, is he on the front dying and that's why he's here? Or did he die and now he's going on to heaven, but Grace and the kids can't come because they deny Christ?
Right.
I don't know. Like, what do you guys think? I mean, like, where do you, what's your take on that character? Where's he going? What's that? What's happening with him?
I don't even know what dead means within the container of the film
Right.
because, they even framed the living, the psychic, she looked more ghastly than the ghosts. It's all a matter of perspective. The container of that house might flip roles. Where is he? He's in his own purgatory. There's maybe a fifth kind.
Right.
He's somewhere. I don't think he's in the world of the living by any means.
Well,
So
yeah,
darn it.
he's directly physically there with them, at least for that
Mm-hmm.
period. But then he goes away. And that's
Right.
what I always wonder, is he getting assumed into heaven? Is he like, where is he? What's going on with him? He does say the war is not over.
Right.
And so that's why I wonder if it's like that I'm like wondering if it's like a Jacob's Ladder thing, like he's like dying, but he's not quite dead yet. And then he's like, well, I'm gonna, he'll wake up and go on with his
Right.
life. Or he's, going to hell. I don't know. Maybe that's the other option. Maybe he's an awful man and he's going somewhere else. I don't know.
I mean,
But
he
no, the,
behaves like he's shell-shocked the whole time too,
yeah.
and so it leads. The first time I watched this movie, I wasn't sure what his deal was either. Like I to the point where I thought that like the scene with his character was like a non sequitur, but it really fits in well with the themes of the movie of denying what's going on, and it's in one or two scenes they really portray a whole lot of what depression looks like through his character. And I think personally, if I were to guess what his deal was, I would say that he's dead and he's just a wandering spirit. He doesn't know where to be, so he could show up there, he could show up back on the battlefield where he died, any number of things. But I don't know. It's really left open-ended to decide what his deal is.
Yeah, it's interesting that it could, because this environment is so contained, who knows what, like when we talked about 13 ghosts a couple months ago, and Matthew Lillard says, like, there's a ghost here and there's a ghost there, and no one cares. There's all kinds of ghosts everywhere.
Right.
In this movie, this world, this environment that we live in, we have no idea if there's ghosts at the next house down the road.
Right.
We do know that even though the servants say, we've been here a long time, there aren't any other ghosts. Previous owners aren't there.
Right.
It's not like American Horror Story where everybody who dies in the house comes back and hangs
Right.
around. It's so we don't really know what the cosmology of all this is.
No.
Why the servants are there.
Right.
We know that they weren't there to start. They walk up to the house. But they implied that they were there. The idea of the servants seems to be they're aware of what's going on. They know they're
Right.
dead. They were killed by tuberculosis. They're aware of that. They are then aware, I think, of Grace and the kids are now dead. And
Right.
what they're trying to do is ease them into that.
Yeah.
Which is a nicer approach than, say, Beetlejuice, where it's just a, shitty book that kind
Right.
of says that what here's what you do when you're dead. But they're very nicely coming in and saying, very trying to very gently tell them, by the way, you're ghosts. And that needn't be so bad, I guess. So there is an optimism to that aspect, that these servants are trying to help, help them adjust. But it does ask certain questions about, are there ghosts in other houses? Are there, why only, is it only this house? What's going on? It's really, it's, in any other movie, I would almost call it a flaw, design flaw. But with this movie, I'm like, well, no, it's exactly why it works. It shouldn't be, it shouldn't make any sense. It's a story of personal horror wrapped up in a ghost movie. Because I think the implications are, as we, somewhat comedically mentioned, I mean, like, this is probably gonna suck. It's probably not gonna be a particularly happy or fulfilling existence to haunt a house. I do like the idea that we do get the impression they're going to be malevolent spirits. I think, when other people move in, they're gonna get them out. I do think that's interesting, and that's all Grace. Like, Grace is like, okay, we have this existence and we're going to fight for it no matter what. Is a very, the movie is, I think, in some ways optimistic in that respect. It's also very pessimistic. It's very interesting. The ethics and morality of this particular tale are all over the place. And did you guys have any thoughts on that?
I think it kind of, I guess, Grace is, I think, in that house forever due to an element of stubbornness, whereas, the staff, they're kind of there out of duty and circumstance if they're tied to it. I think they were trying to be a little benevolent. And then the humans or the living, I think there's even some ethical quandary there. It seemed like some of them knew that they should leave. They weren't welcome. The fact that they were conducting a seance at all, I guess if you really want to talk about it, there's probably some kind of discussion on consent all over this movie that we could dig into. Some of it, might be a stretch, but entering where you are not welcome, et cetera, there's a lot of different, I think, moral tributaries we could go down.
So you mean in the sense that the like possession is nine tenths? Like, yeah, like so you're kind of suggesting that the idea that the let me try to wrap my head around it here.
Especially if we're approaching it from the perspective of, Grace and the kids are protagonists.
Sure,
Effectively,
right.
it's from their perspective. I don't think Grace understands that what she's doing is a bad thing. I think she, might feel as though she's trying to defend her homestead,
Sure.
shielding the kids from what she's done. So from that, she is not a villain. Or is she, if she believes what she's doing is the right thing?
Right. But in this sense, that the ghosts, that our ghosts here, Grace and their kids, are the rightful tenants of the home. And you had mentioned it earlier, the idea of, if you explore it from the perception of the haunter, the hauntee is actually the transgressor. That we have a, as you pointed out, the narcissistic or anthropocentric even notion of, that we are in fact the protagonist, and therefore the dead are less than us. Whereas we are now confronted with the reality that the dead are just as aware and have just as much agency as we do. Therefore, there is a legitimate, it's like, it's a less, it's not, it's a not a not funny Beetlejuice, right? Like you've got it's you've got in the Beetle in Beetlejuice, you've got the Maitlands who die, they live in their house, and the new people move in and they're awful. And so there is this discussion about whose house it is. And then they all get along. Because Beetlejuice is a fun movie for fun people, although it's actually really if you think about it for more than a few minutes, you'll get really upset, actually. But because there's some horrible implications to Beetlejuice, in the sense of how awful the afterlife really is. But yeah, I mean, in this case, we have if the Maitlands didn't back down, we would have the I forget the other name of the other couple for some reason in my head. Beetlejuice
The
and
Dietzes.
Dietzes, thank you. The Dietzes, where they were like, well, no, we're getting making sure the, instead of befriending Winona Ryder, we're going to really upset her by continuing to open curtains or close curtains and make noise in her bedroom until she's basically traumatized and and her parents make them leave. So I mean, there is that, but yeah, I mean, both of those movies do, I guess, have that connection of re-examining your position as the living versus the dead, and that is interesting. And it didn't occur to me until Maggie brought it up. So I think that's an interesting way to look at it because it didn't quite occur to me that that could be part of this discussion. That it almost would work in the same way as as in colonization in a way. Walking into a location that just because it is empty does not mean it is unoccupied and or that it doesn't have history that you need to respect. When you move into a new place, you don't think about the people that lived there prior to you. Or who will live there after you. But yeah, it's that's interesting.
And I think one moment that kind of, I don't know, drives that a little home is, and I think it was Anne when she was talking to Grace about the man threatened to open the curtains. From the perspective of the kids, being highly photosensitive, that is a threat that has something that would have real intense implications. And to the living, he just wanted to get some vitamin D to, let some sunlight into his house, but it was a real danger, perceived danger, to them. And I think that just shows the, there's just different sides to that coin, and they both think that they're doing the right thing.
The from the perspective of the living, it's just the curtains keep getting pulled shut when we don't want them to, so we'll just take them down. And then the ghosts can't move them anymore. But then from their perspective, like, well, are the ghosts keeping it closed for a reason? Doesn't occur to them. Right. So yeah, that's another interesting way of looking at it. But you're right. Yeah, that's a very, very interesting thing to think about that we in haunted house films, you never think about the ghost what the ghosts
What the
feel.
ghosts are thinking,
Yeah. We don't consider that they might have feelings. Or concerns, but and that even the seance and in a sense to talk to them, isn't to actually converse with them. It's to
Evict them.
evict them. Yeah, it's to find evidence necessary to get rid of them. There's no, it's interesting because we just did The Changeling last week, which was sort of was a movie more about communication between two figures, the living and the dead, are actually somewhat coming to an accord, but Joseph the ghost is also like not having any bullshit and will and will hurt people if he wants to. But that is also the case of a being that knows it's dead and has his own. But it's an interesting contrast to the others in the sense that John in The Changeling is not trying to evict the ghost. He's trying to
Oh.
understand the ghost. He wants to know what's
Yeah.
happening, and maybe find a solution so that maybe the kid can move on. But in the case of maybe, say, this movie, the people that have moved into this house are not really interested in coexisting.
Right.
And so they are, in essence, colonists, invaders, into an environment that is important to
Right.
whoever live, who are, in a sense, living there, dwelling there, existing there.
Yeah.
Neat. I never thought of it like that.
No.
Yeah, I dig that. What else? Like, to do my, stand-up comedy. What else? What else? I mean, we talked a little bit about, I mentioned Finola Flanagan. What's your guys' take on her as, what was her name? Mrs. Mills?
Yeah,
Yeah,
Mills.
Mills. Yeah.
I thought everybody did exactly what they were supposed to do in their respective roles. They looked the part, they acted the part.
Right.
I mean, I've no notes. I think that's kind of my stance.
No, totally. But Mrs. Mills is a character. I mean, maybe it's a dead topic, I don't know. But I just was interested in the idea of, like I said, I kind of in jest, but the idea of like the role of servant,
Right.
but also in this case, as helper. Like the class issue is still there in the sense that, there doesn't seem to be any understanding of equality once
Right.
everybody's on the same page. However, there is something to the idea that the servant seems to have taken upon themselves to be in this role, that Mrs. Mills does want to help them understand who they are and what's happening to them.
Right.
So you have a different kind of interpretation of servant that might tie back into the religion aspect, where the Christian thing is to serve others,
Right.
that maybe to them that it is sort of the Christian thing to do, but they act more as almost like a Greek chorus in a way. Like they're very much aware of the circumstances, and are pushing, but they're not outright telling anybody anything. But no, they seem like nice people.
Right.
I think one thing that's interesting is they are the servants, but they are the richest in terms of awareness and knowledge of what's going on.
Right.
In a sense, that gives them substantially more power than, Grace and the kids had. So I think the power dynamics are interesting. On the base layer, they are catering to Grace, cleaning up after her, dealing with her, losing her mind here and there. But the entire time, they know what's going on. They are kind of, controlling the situation, at least
Right.
more so than the others. So
Yeah.
I think that dichotomy is interesting as well. Lower, socioeconomic status, but morality higher, awareness higher, probably
Yeah.
self-actualization, that they've got more in a lot of different areas.
Yeah, definitely. I do love the scene of, in terms of them having power dynamics, it's really early on. Grace confronts Mrs. Mills and says, "The letter for the advertisement for the servants never went out. So where did you come from?" And
Right.
Mrs. Mills plays her like a fiddle, like
Yeah.
immediately. Oh well, truth is, we just showed up. And when Grace starts to be worried about that, she says, "But here's the thing: we lived here before,
Right.
and we can be really, really helpful." Like why I said you don't really need to show us the house is because we already kind of know it. So we're perfect to help you take care of your photosensitive kids. And Grace just goes, okay, great.
Right. Yeah.
And you realize Mrs. Mills just completely conned her.
Not really telling a lie,
Yeah,
right?
no, she's not lying, but she's conning. She's definitely she's leading her towards a conclusion that she wants Grace to come to, but Grace
Right.
thinks it's her own conclusion. It's a beautiful moment of like you said, Maggie, the power dynamic is oftentimes in the court of the person with the least amount of it,
Right.
socially. But that Grace is so desperate that she's easy to fool. And so there's also there's something wonderful about he's not in it much. Eric Sykes is Mr. Tuttle. There's a slight passive aggressiveness to all of his lines that I really appreciated. Like, oftentimes he's just speaking in affirmation of what Mrs. Mills says, but he says it always in this affirmative, but oh yes, sure. We are hard workers.
Well,
But
because they have to play it, they have to play it really, really tight because, these three are supposed to, upon your first viewing, be who you think is going to end up being the bad guys. Like he often speaks in these, weird, kind of riddle-ish, ominous tones that, once you realize what's going on, it's not really ominous. He's just like, making sure that the jig doesn't get up too soon. So it's interesting. I also think it's interesting that these three come from off-site. They come from, they're not in the house at the beginning of the film. They
right.
come there. So it's almost like you leaving you wonder, did were they evicted by, Rose and her husband, or or maybe another previous owner, had gotten them out, these ghosts out of the house, and they come back.
Or they knew that knew that Grace wouldn't be aware of her scenario, so they kind of just like went out the back door and came around the front, they, but also we don't really get too much. I mean, we get the idea that they exist within a physical realm, but we also don't know. Maybe they do disappear. I don't know. There is something to the idea of like how little they see the living, despite their constant presence. That these two worlds don't collide all the time, which is another question of like the overall cosmology of this world and how it works, which we don't know, and nobody, and probably neither do the ghosts, probably aren't quite, don't get a handbook to tell them, well, this is how you interact with the living. It seems incidental, it seems accidental. So yeah, I mean, it is interesting that they come from outside, and that they are outsiders. I think maybe that's also meant to underscore they don't live there. They aren't the owners of the house. They aren't the they have a tie to it, but Grace is its actual occupant. Does that make sense? Am I making sense of that?
Because I guess if you were going to, take the film at face value, literally, they're probably just coming over from their graves. I mean,
Could be.
they're on their graves are right there, in the yard,
Yeah, I mean,
and
and even the
they
very
come from
beginning
there.
is Grace is screaming in bed. It's the first time we see her. We don't know exactly how long ago it was that she killed her kids. There could be the occasional reset button, that where this cycle begins anew. Although I think you would think Mrs. Mills would have at least brought that up. Then, once everything is settled and we're all aware of what's happening, I mean, Mrs. Mills is like, well, by the way, you guys might forget again in a week. And then we'll, or this is the 15th time we've done this. Every single time I keep coming back and having to remind you assholes that you're dead. Although I do like that scene a lot too, where she's like, I think I've reached the end of my tether. And Miss Tuttle's like, oh yes, end of tether, like, and they're like, we're not screwing around anymore. We're just gonna start going yelling boo at people until they get it. But no, I mean, like, I do love the idea of ghosts getting frustrated and just being like, you know what? I'm done being subtle. Now I'm just gonna chase these kids around until they figure shit out. But But yeah, I mean, let's talk about scares though. Like, so I mentioned the one, obviously the I think it's I do you guys agree is that the scariest part of the movie? The little girl with the it's the old
Oh,
lady
for
with the
sure.
veil
Yeah,
on.
for sure. Yeah.
It's an unbelievably unsettling image. But yeah, are you mad? I am your daughter. Like
Right.
it was given away in the trailer. I don't
Right.
know what you guys think about that. Do you guys have an opinion on that? I mean, I mean, Maggie, obviously you saw it on home video after its release, but Sam, you were
Right.
around. Did you see this in theaters?
No, I saw it on home video.
No.
Not that long ago, actually, like
Oh, okay.
within the last literal 10 years, not the objective 10 years that runs all the way to 1996.
Yeah. Yeah, this movie is already is 23 years old, and yeah.
So yeah, I had known, that scene was in there. It didn't take away anything from its effectiveness because, when you see that scene spoken about, like, in the trailers or spoken about in, like the 100 scariest movie
Yeah,
moments
I was gonna say
kind
that
of
was.
places, you know,
It hit that list in the first
right.
their first list anyway. Yeah, it
Right.
did hit that moment. Yeah.
It doesn't take away because, it does, you loses all the context, so you don't really remember it that well.
Yeah. I do
Until
and
you watch
I
the film, and then all the context is there, and it makes it much more effective.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, also like the scarier the real scarier part of the game, again in the sense of what Maggie was talking about the actual implications of the scene, the connotations of the scene is ultimately the thing that's probably the scariest about it is Grace tries to strangle her own kid,
Right.
because she's seeing something else, which
Yeah.
is again a hint to Grace
What's
is not
really going on?
stable.
Right.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Grace is pretty unstable with her kids and has been for a while, so I mean that's sort of the scarier part of it is that ultimately she ends up trying to strangle the damn thing and.
Right.
Which I mean, who wouldn't? But I
Yeah.
mean, like, it's I see that in my living room. I mean, well, I'm not gonna try and strangle, I'd probably pee myself and run away. But
Right.
ghost with a veil and it's like being creepy like that, I'd probably be like, yeah, I'm out.
Right.
I'm probably not gonna attack it. I'm probably just gonna start crying, probably. But
But she's a mother and she's, trying to protect her children, from what she thinks
right.
is a threat.
Right.
So I get it. Like, she would probably try to attack the thing, and that makes it, that the haunting that much more serious. When, all facts are revealed and it turns out, they're the ghosts and they're, terrorizing this family that's trying to live there. Stuff like that, or the scene where she's running around the house with a gun and, she fires it off a couple times on the front porch later. That would be terrifying if you were a human being living in that house. I mean,
But yeah,
my
by the way,
God.
I love by the way that when they after when the cat's out of the bag and they show the people around the table talking
Right.
and they refer to that scene as the
Being
little girl
possessed.
possessed you.
Right.
Again, it's back to that, like Maggie was talking about, the idea of whose perspective are you looking at? Because from their
Right.
perspective, the kid possessed her,
Yeah.
the old lady. But from
Right.
Grace's perspective, the old lady possessed Anne.
Right.
And so, like, was Grace wrong in trying to defend herself against
Right.
this old lady who's injecting herself into her the lives of her and her
Yeah.
children?
Or even, that subtle moment where, she shows him Grace the drawings of the people living in the house, and, they got the numbers next to him, how many times she's seen it.
Neil,
And
is it 14?
the scary old lady is like 14, and it's like, you find out later that she's a medium. And then, it all makes sense. The child is second place, and he's, children in these movies are usually more attuned to the spiritual nature. It's a really clever and clever moment that becomes clever later, but is, when it happens, it's actually like a scary moment.
Yeah, the
It's
close-up on that 14 with a little bit of a scare
yeah.
forward is actually pretty unnerving. You realize this the scary looking one's around a lot.
Right.
We haven't seen her yet. We're gonna, But yeah, I do love that little moment where she's like, I've drawn how many times I've seen them, and like the really scary one's 14.
Right.
Because of course you're gonna see the scary one all the time, you
Yeah.
know. But yeah. What about you, Maggie? What do you think is the what scares in this movie work for you?
The one that we talked about with the old lady possessing Anne is definitely the most kind of, I think, universally scary. And I think the rest of the movie is kind of dependent upon like what scares you.
Sure.
So I just think most of the movie is just unsettling to the point where I'm just uncomfortable. And sitting in that discomfort is what's the scariest, I think.
All right.
Yeah.
And they do a good job at keeping that consistent. But I think it's really just the whole thing. The idea of it, the idea of, if you think about it, like, who am I intruding upon living where I'm living, the way that I'm living?
Yeah.
Me, I've got a cemetery right there. Who am I bothering?
Right.
Thinking about that and just kind of like, who's right, who's wrong? Are we all just kind of, if I sage my house, who am I offending?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully nobody.
Yeah.
I feel like I've lived here long enough that I would know if there was a ghost, but especially within the context of the others, where they're
Right.
active, you know.
Yeah.
Doors aren't sh slamming themselves shut and locking on a routine basis. So I'm assuming there's nothing going on there. But yeah, it's like I had said earlier, I do think that probably one of the scariest things about this film is how disorienting time is. Because your brain is hardwired to associate dark with night.
Right.
And so we're watching these scenes where she's talking to her kids, and I'm like, okay, it's like 2 in the morning, right? And then she
Right.
goes out her door, and it's bright daylight outside. To the point that I did ask, wonder my, under the circumstances, we've got kids who are that allergic to light. Why wouldn't you just, you know, Sam, I know you've worked the midnight shift
Right. Yeah,
throughout
why
your
would you
life.
just change your
Why
sleep
wouldn't you just change your
schedule?
sleep schedule? Yeah.
Right.
To just be like, you got, I mean, she doesn't have work in the morning.
Right.
So I mean, I would think that, you know, I would start, if I had kids who were, you know, allergic to light and then had nowhere to be, I'd
Right.
probably just be like, all right, we'll get up at 8 p.m.
Right.
and go to bed before the sun comes out. But at the same time, it's still this really unsettling, like you have no idea what day it is, what time it is, what time of day it is,
Right.
that, you know. And of course, it works perfectly with the gothic atmosphere because you've got all these long shadows and tiny little light sources with, you know, pressed right up against people's faces. Like,
Right.
because oftentimes the simplest affectations always are the most effective. That, you know, it's still that flashlight under the face when you tell a ghost story. You know,
Right.
it's and I love that about this film. It's so classically put together. It feels very much right up there with Ray Wise's, not Ray Wise, or is it Ray Wise? The Haunting. It's Ray Wise, right? No,
No, Ray Wise is Leland
Ray Wise
Palmer from
is Leland Palmer from Twin Peaks.
right.
What was the name of the director of The
Oh my
Haunting?
God, I'm drawing a I don't
I'm
know.
getting old.
Yeah, this sucks.
Seriously, why don't I remember anything anymore? I have to know.
Right.
But yeah, it's right up there, I think, with The Haunting, the
Yeah.
you know or even The Changeling, both of which you know have wear their gothic trappings. Robert Wise, thank you very
Robert Wise,
much.
yeah.
Robert Wise, not Ray Wise. Ray Wise did not make The Haunting. He is Leland Palmer
Right.
in Twin Peaks. You know, it has that. It also reminded me a lot of The Innocents, which we did. We kind of alluded to when talking about Bly Manor. There's
Right.
some turn of the screw going on with this movie, I think. Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. What do you think? You think that's true, Maggie?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it was probably intentional too, just the characterizations, the mood. There's definitely some of that going on. And
We do have a we have an unreliable narrator in a sense. She doesn't narrate anything, but our protagonist is unreliable.
Big time.
Yeah. And what again, much to the point of the other of the Innocents in particular, the Turn of the Screw is it's not in the Haunting of Bly Manor because our governess is our protagonist in that movie and she's a nice person. But in the actual original story, the one of the points of having an unreliable narrator is that this is a woman's defense. A kid died while she was taking care of him. And there's questions about that. And so she said, well, it's not me. It was Totes the ghost. Not my lousy care. Maybe she's telling the truth, maybe she isn't. But we do have that aspect here where Grace is like, where we watch this movie and say, is Grace a good mother? She a terrible mother? Where does she fall on this? Because she's certainly not. She's not a comfort necessarily. She is a comforting presence, but not necessarily, not really. She's also a threatening presence. Her children both adore her and fear her. And they're not even necessarily sure why. Like the little boy, Nicholas, who's not given an awful lot to do in this narrative besides whimpering, but often does so in like the presence of his mother. That there's definitely an arrested development thing going on where he's a little too attached to her, but at the same time understands she's not exactly good for him. So there's a lot of that going on. So, I mean, that's what I was thinking of last night when watching. I was like, holy shit, this is a lot like The Innocents, without the sexuality. Because there's that aspect in Turn of the Screw and in The Innocents as well. And in Bly Manor, because Quint is scum, but and has no shame, and so he'll inhabit a young boy's body and get inappropriate with adult women. But in this case, yeah. But in this case, we have we do have genuine innocent children who are just in a situation they can't possibly comprehend, and so they react very, very realistically, I think. These two kids are good. And they're really interesting characters. Like I said, Anne is much so much like her mother. There's little moments. But I love stop breathing like that. Stop breathing like that. Stop breathing. Great foreshadowing. But also it's echoed by both mother and daughter. Little things like that, Anne is a lot more like her mother than I think she'd like to believe she is. And she's taking so many cues from Grace. And poor Nicholas is just getting abused on both ends. But at the same time, he makes himself a very available victim. Because that's how he receives his attention. So there's a lot of weird, fucked up family psychology going on in the others as well. That is probably adds to its general levels of discomfort because we really don't know. When you watch the movie, you don't know where it's going to go, and you don't know what Grace is going to do. But we fear for these children. But yeah, I'm talking a lot. Does anybody want to jump on that or jump?
I also just kind of want to point out, like, upon a rewatch, knowing what Grace did, she is a murderer, but I still found myself in the film being like, she's just trying her best. And I'm like, wait a minute, hold on. So I just think that's interesting. I also, to your point, I think it's funny that her name is Grace. She doesn't really truly have grace. They probably should have named her Prudence instead, because it is quite a sexless film. There is not an ounce of that in it, which I think is probably to its benefit. But I just think so well done thinking about all the little Easter eggs, the little nuggets. Everything just feels very intentional.
Like I said, it's not it. The funny thing about the twist is, even though you don't see it coming, it's so there. There's so many hints. That it is. And like I said, I spent most of the film wondering if Anne remembers everything or not, because she does have these moments where she's like, Wait, her and her mother are arguing, and she seems like she's about to say, "And Yen, you killed us."
Right.
But she's keeping it to herself. But it turns out she doesn't actually know that. She knows something happened that day, though.
Right.
But she doesn't know that it resulted in her death. But it's she's always coming close to that point of, "I know something you don't know, but I'm not going to tell you because it'll hurt you."
Right.
But at the same time, like, you keep hurting me. But she just isn't aware of how serious it is. But to your point, Maggie, it is interesting. That's kind of what I was talking about, like the moral and ethical implications of this film. Because even though we know Grace has killed her own children, we still sympathize with her
Right.
and with her role as a mother, which is maybe again a testament to how good Nicole Kidman is, because she's able to play, like I said, she could have easily played Mommy Dearest and called it
Right.
a day.
Yeah.
I am totally an evil, abusive mother. Instead, what we get is somebody who just is trying
Right. But
but
it's well in over
failing.
their head. Yeah.
Yeah, and failing because she has no real control of
Right.
and is afraid of everything. It's interesting to note she does have a line that I wondered about. She says the servants knew I couldn't leave the house. Do we think she was an agoraphobic?
Probably. Yeah.
I think if the kids truly were photosensitive, or was it her shutting out the world altogether as well? In terms of like, let me just fully lock myself in here.
She does have
Or
the
it
line too about, yeah.
could have been like a Munchausen kind of thing too, it's
There was that, yeah. Mrs. Mills does have that insinuation early on. She says, "Have you? When was the last time they saw sunlight? Have you tried giving them sunlight?" Yeah. Who knows? So, I mean, the actual greater limits of Grace's abuse are questions here that we don't know. How much did how much how legitimate is their photosensitivity? She might just really want to keep them inside in the dark where she can control everything about their environment.
I choose to believe that they were photosensitive, but them are asking about, have you tried it recently? Like, it's more like, well, now that they're dead, they can't be hurt by sunlight.
Yeah,
It
there
doesn't,
is that, but you might suddenly discover that they aren't affected by it anymore because they're dead. But yeah, I don't know, Maggie. What's your take on that? Do you have anything to add on that subject?
I think it's probably left open for interpretation intentionally. I think they're probably, because Grace projects, I think very well could have been a Munchausen's kind of deal. In terms of, let me just blame it on the kids. And then that could manifest into, resentment for the kids, whatever. Just sh there's some stuff going on with her, and the extent to which had to be pretty bad because she ended up killing her kids, but
In a fugue state, apparently. Yeah, she doesn't seem to like them very much.
no.
And which I guess you don't have to, but you don't have to like your kids, I guess. But yeah, it's there's a lot going on in there. And it makes for such a fascinating film. Sam, did you have anything you wanted to bring up in your notes?
No, we covered most of it. I think another thing that makes this film work as well as it does is it always keeps a sense of geography. Like, you talked about how we don't know whether what time of day or it is, at any point in the film, day or night it could be. But we never really get lost in the mansion. We always kind of have a feeling for where we are, even in the dark, which I think works really towards this film's benefit. A lot of movies would probably either not have that sense of direction or not be successful at it, which would leave you feeling like, kind of lost. So I just think it's to the film's credit that they have such a sense of geography to it, overall. And, to the point where they even, kind of lampshaded at the beginning, where she's walking them through the house, it's like this room connects to this room, and this room connects to this room, and
And you
so
don't
yeah.
enter one room without closing and locking the door.
Right.
And then, but also makes a point of saying you need to memorize the layout
Right.
today,
Yep.
because the
Because
kid's
it's going to be important
photosensitivity.
later. Yep.
No, it's the setting is fantastic.
Yeah.
It really does. It creates, and it's great for claustrophobia, but also it gives you all this space
Right.
to run around in. All of it dark too. Like you have these little circles of light in the middle of these big dark rooms, and gives that campfire feel. It is really an extraordinary piece in terms of location, and space.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. Did Maggie, did you have anything else you'd like to bring up about the film The Others?
No, I think you guys covered it. The one thing that I will say that is just an aside is I rented this on Prime to rewatch it, and at the end, when Prime recommends another film for you to watch based off of what you've just watched, Prime served Little Nicky up to me.
Okay. Yeah, that
So
makes sense.
good double feature. Right.
That's it's interesting. I do love I do love algorithms, that sometimes it works out really well where you watch a movie and then it says you want to watch this movie. I'm like, actually, yes, I do. I remember not too long ago I watched on Tubi. For whatever reason, I watched the 2000 Dungeons and Dragons.
Right.
Terrible film. Delightful. I loved it, but it's not good. But right after it was like, do you want to watch Masters of the Universe? And I'm like, yeah,
Right.
yes, I do,
Actually, I do, yeah.
Tubi. But yeah, sometimes you do get like Little Nicky after The Others, which is an
Right.
interesting choice. I was disappointed this isn't available on the Criterion Channel right now, but I bought it
Yeah, that sucks.
on
Yep.
Blu-ray, but I had kind of hoped it was also on the Criterion. But I'm glad Criterion gave it a go.
Right.
I love that Criterion is not afraid of genre film,
Right.
and will go out of its way to also release these really, really lovely physical media releases.
Right.
But I watched some of the deleted scenes on it. Most of them were actually extended, and they didn't work very well. They were a little bit more expanded. Like there was a little bit more of Grace kind of like explaining where she's coming from, and it kind of eliminated some of the ambiguity. And I was like, I'm glad they cut that. Like they were good
Right.
deleted scenes in the sense of I know why these weren't here anymore.
Right.
Which show I think Alejandro Amenabar, I think he also did the music for this film. I think he was credited as
Yes.
yeah.
Yes, he did.
But wonderful director. He made Vanilla Sky and the
Right.
original Open Your
Open
Eyes,
your eyes.
which I think Vanilla Sky is a lot of fun. But he also did Thesis, which is also a pretty good little kind of murderer movie, but little horror film. But very technically proficient director.
Right.
But I think I love deleted scenes that make sense because you could see the director making choices that were good for the film,
Right.
not just cut for time, but because this scene is too much. It's gonna give away too much. It's gonna say too much, damage the flow of the film. But a lot of them were mostly just expanded, like Grace talking to Mrs. Mills, and giving away the ghost in some cases. But they were the but the you, Maggie, so your only criticism is you said it was about 10 minutes too long.
I think so. There was a point where I was like, I don't know if we need all of whatever's happening right now. I can't exactly pinpoint when that moment was. I just know I looked at my watch for a minute and was like,
I think there is a point in this second act where you do start to kind of zone out a little bit. I think it's like shortly, actually. I think the big scare sequence comes in shortly thereafter,
Right.
and kind of. So I think you might be right.
Jolts you awake, yeah.
Yeah, one there might be this one misstep in this movie that the second act drags a little bit, and they seem to know that, and so they throw something at you to really drag you back in. Because once that moment happens, from there on out, it's actually pretty frenetically paced. Even though it's still mostly Grace wandering around in the dark, but it's still the pacing picks up. You have little moments like that one, or Mrs. Mills outright saying, "You know what? I appreciate the end of my tether." Like, once that happens too, like, okay, things are gonna get weird. But yeah, the second act maybe it does drag out the mystery a little bit too long. There's a point where you set enough atmosphere, you got to move on to plot, and I think maybe The Others is about 10 minutes late on making that shift. I think you're right about that. Do you agree with that, Sam?
I could see it.
Yeah.
I didn't have a problem with the runtime, and it wasn't checking my watch or anything. But yeah, I could see, where it could be tightened up a little bit, here and there.
Yeah.
It doesn't take away from the film's impact, I don't think, or how successful
Oh, no.
the revelation of the twist is. So that's good. But yeah, I could see maybe tighten it up a little bit.
I think it was well done. I agree. It doesn't really take away from it. I also acknowledge I have a millennial's attention span.
Sure.
So
We all
like
do. Yeah. I mean, the in general, even old timers like Sam and myself, I mean, the society marches on, as they say. And so, like, attention spans aren't getting easier, even for us, where
No.
the quick fix, lightning pace of modern civilization is still affects us just as easily, as much as someone who grew up with it. That, my attention span, my patience isn't what it used to be. I watched Killers of the Flower Moon not too long ago, and it was agonizingly long, and I was just like begging for it to end. It's a good movie, but I was just like, I just don't have this in me anymore. But I can sit down and watch 7 or 8 hours worth of film in one sitting, one story, one narrative for 3.5 hours, and I start being like, geez, I could be doing something else with my time, no matter how good it is. But yeah, it's
I will
yeah,
say at
it's
one point I paused it to use the restroom, and I thought it was later in the film that it was. So that
yeah,
probably does
yeah.
lead credence to, the fact that maybe it was a couple minutes too long,
Yeah, I did. I think I did the same thing. I paused it to go, I think, to have a smoke, and I think I was like, okay, this thing has like 40 minutes left or whatever. It was like, no, it's like an hour. Like, it was, yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a film that does, I think, ask for some patience. And I guess if you are listening to this and you have listened to this whole episode and you haven't seen The Others, be prepared for that, I guess. But
Because
like
this is a movie
any,
that takes itself at its own pace, and
yeah,
it's,
it's a good haunted house movie, and that's what usually what the best haunted house movies do, is they take their time. If they throw a lot at you early on, then you get bored after. It's but yeah, you have to have, I think, some patience to watch, a good gothic horror story anyway. I think requires a certain level of patience from a
Like I
viewer.
had mentioned earlier in the month that for the longest time I wasn't really into haunted houses in movies because and that's because of my attention span and not being willing to let the movie do its own thing at its own pace. And this is a good example of a place where you just have to trust the film to go, and it totally delivers on what it's going to try to do.
Yeah. Maggie, you're a fan of ghost stories anyway, right? Like, is that one of your
Yep,
things? Yeah.
I like ghosts. Although I'm not really a gothic person, I don't have great patience. Which probably is why my only criticism of this film is the runtime pacing. But I also think like The Others is kind of anachronistic in terms of I haven't seen a gothic movie quite like it. It feels old. It feels like a relic of a different time, other than
Yeah.
the early aughts, which I think is really cool that they were able to kind of capture that as well.
Right.
Oh, I agree, 110%. Yeah, that this film does feel like it's very much very at home in the 60s, the 60s or 70s, and making these weird little gothic movies about dark houses, and the fact that it's 2001. Even in my memory, I think of it as like being in like 96. And the fact that it's actually a 21st century horror film is kind of astonishing, because you watch it and you don't really associate it with what you would associate modern horror with. So I think you're right. I think there is a certain level of anachronism that plays very well. And yeah. Do you have anything else to add before we wrap up?
No,
That
I think
seems
I'm
to be
good.
indicatory. Maggie, thank you so much for coming on with
Yes,
us.
thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
This
Great
has
to
been
have you.
fun. Yep.
Had
This has
fun,
been
yeah.
fun. You have a great mind for this. And
Thank
so
you.
I very much appreciate you coming back with us. Sorry it took us so long to get you on by yourself.
No worries. It was worth the wait. I said I had bad patience, but hey, it was worth it this time.
No, you had good
Thank you
patience.
so
You
much.
were, yeah, you were, and you're very kind to us. We sometimes get awkward and wordy, and so your patience actually is
Much appreciated.
much appreciated, actually. Yeah, we appreciate patient guests who are patient with our weirdness. So yeah, Sam, you want to take us out?
Thank you guys for listening. That wraps up Haunting Month. Next month we'll do you want to give it away, or do we want to hold it close to our vests? Let's
Oh yeah, we're doing vampires.
you're
Yeah,
doing vampires
doing
again.
some vampires.
So look forward to that. There's some cool movies we've picked out for it. One that I've never seen before, so that's good. I've always liked to do a first time movie in here. But once again, thank you for listening. Watch out for each other. Be sure to I don't know. Just watch out for each other. I guess I'll take us out by saying, be kind, rewind, but mostly be kind. Thank you.
Oh, Santa Devil, dancing at the devil's door.